So while it is irrevocably associated with the super race fetishes and brutal ethnic cleansing of Nazi Germany in the 20th century, the so-called science of eugenics is actually a homegrown all-American distortion of medical science. Much of the murky original research and theories of how societies might take control of their own gene pools to increase the numbers of intelligent people and to eliminate so-called feeble-minded people and criminals, it all took place on Long Island, the same laboratory where DNA was first identified. By the 1920s, eugenics programs had burst into the mainstream in America, with sterilization programs in a number of states actually taking place. Several of the nearly 3,000 of the living victims of forced sterilization in North Carolina will actually testify before a commission today. Until 1974, North Carolina had one of the most aggressive eugenics movements in the country, sterilizing an estimated 7,600 people who were deemed, quote, socially or intellectually unfit, end quote, to have children. Here's Elaine Riddick, who was sterilized in 1968 after she was raped and gave birth to a son. She's talking here to CBS News.
At the age of 14, the state of North Carolina chose to sterilize me. I didn't think or believe that people had that right, that you know, our government gave these people that kind of right. You should not have done it because you took the person's soul away. You took the person's spirit away.
Took the person's spirit away in the guise of, or using the argument of, medical science and the advancement of the species. That's what eugenics was all about, and you can hear the human cost in the voice of Elaine Riddick there. North Carolina State Representative Larry Womble was instrumental in removing the state eugenics law from the books back in 2003 and in organizing today's listening session, which he hopes will eventually lead to reparations for the victims of eugenics. He joins us from North Carolina. Representative Womble, good morning to you.
Yes, good morning to you too.
And Paul Lombardo also joins us. He's a professor of law at Georgia State University and the author of Three Generations, No Imbeciles. Paul, good morning to you.
Morning, John.
Remind us that imbeciles, feeble-minded, these were medical terms a century ago, yes?
It's true. The language is kind of harsh to us now, but they were thought to be very precise medical terms at the time they were coined.
And Larry Womble, what was the scale of the sterilization? I mean, I mentioned a number of 7,600 people. What were the motivations for doing this, and why did this law stay on the books for so long in North Carolina?
Right. To be manipulate society.
That's the voice of North Carolina State Representative Larry Womble from North Carolina, who's responsible for a listening session of some of the voices of the people who are still living from the forced sterilizations in North Carolina. Paul Lombardo, how could science trump what seems to be the constitutional guarantees against a forced sterilization, which strikes me as utterly preposterous given our democratic values in the 20th century?
We didn't reach the point of deciding that we had constitutional values in the area of reproduction until much later. We had laws against people getting married who were considered to be somehow defective. That's the language that they used back then. We also had laws, of course, as everyone now remembers, against people of different races being married. So the values that we hold now in terms of reproduction were simply not the case 100 years ago, or even, for that matter, 50 or 60 years ago.
Can you describe briefly how the eugenics movement in the United States really came out of this curious sort of hybrid of the wealth of the Gilded Age and industrialists thinking that they were going to do something good for society and lasting with the amounts of money that were unprecedented in human history a century ago, and the rapid developments of medical science, which actually brought huge advantages to the United States as well as eugenics.
One of the peculiar things about studying eugenics is that you find that the great fortunes of the 19th century actually went into the kind of philanthropy that ended up being eugenics. We have the Carnegies, the Rockefellers, and the Harrimans of railroad, oil fortunes, and others, leaving their money and the foundations supporting science. And certainly eugenics was thought to be mainline science. The Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory that you mentioned in your opening opened up as the Eugenics Record Office in 1910, and it was a place where people were supposed to study genealogy and study fine families and see how you could make better families.
Wow.
And, not incidentally, how you could eliminate those families that caused lots of social costs, people in institutions, asylums, prisons, and, as you've already mentioned, people on welfare.
A terrifying historical legacy described there by Paul Lombardo, professor of law at Georgia State University and author of Three Generations, No Imbeciles, Eugenics, the Supreme Court, and Buck v. Bell, which is a very important case in all of this. Larry Womble, before we go, North Carolina State Representative, what do you expect to hear today? And given the references there to rich people and philanthropy that actually started, in some sense, the eugenics movement more than a century ago, what's an appropriate reparation for the people you represent?
Well, at the hearing today, we're going to hear from the victims themselves. They've been reluctant about coming out, but now they're coming out and they're exposing this horrendous thing that went on almost like genocide in some areas. So that is the victims' time to speak out and for government officials to be there and to listen and to hopefully respond. So far as the money amount, there's no amount of money that can compensate these victims for what the government has done. This was the government, and most of these were children in North Carolina, 10, 11, 12 years old.
Right.
And so they were not criminals. They had not broken any law. They happened to be poor, or they happened to have frailties in which the government did not want to try to better the society.
Well, Larry,
so
Larry,
at that hearing is that this is going to be the time for them to tell their stories in their own words. The $20,000, I had to put that in my bill as a placeholder. Certainly more than that is warranted.
Larry, you're a hero for spearheading this for all these years. Before you go, give us a sense of some of the names. I don't want to put you on the spot. Put names to these numbers. I'm uncomfortable speaking solely in terms of numbers of these little kids that you're talking about. You found so many of these people. Give me a few names.
Well, the names that I've been permitted to release, one is a gentleman. He was about 14 at the time. They castrated him. His name is Mr. Willie Lynch. There's another young lady at that time. She was about 14. Her name is Elaine Riddick.
And we heard her voice there from a CBS 60 Minutes report. Well, Larry, good luck to you. Congratulations. And we hope that this historical legacy is nearing some sort of closure in the state of North Carolina. Larry Womble is a North Carolina state representative who spearheaded the removal of the eugenics law on the books in North Carolina until the 1970s. And Paul Lombardo, professor of law at Georgia State University. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you, sir.
You can get more of The Takeaway online. Listeners responding to things in today's show. Jay from Massachusetts heard the earlier segment on Mormons and American politics and said, having lived in Utah in the early 2000s, my wife and I personally experienced discrimination, bigotry, and hypocrisy from Mormons, high-level officials down to everyday people. We're both still suffering from PTUD, post-traumatic Utah disorder. We want to especially hear from Mormons who want to call in and give us your take on the rise of the Mormon, if, whether or not this is the Mormon moment. 8778, my take. I'm Celeste Headlee.
I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.